Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beat and Track Podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. It's another week, therefore it's another episode. Today's episode, let me tell you something special about today's episode. It's face to face. So we recorded it at the around the 15th, 16th of June, I believe. And after 14, 15 months, I reopened the studio. The bar at the end, or the little whiff in the bar at the end of the garden, come office, come den, whatever you want to call it. And today's guest, who is the wonderful Sarah Caywood, travelled over. She doesn't live far, just up the road, and headed over. And it was very bizarre sitting, chatting to somebody and being able to look into their actual eyes rather than looking into their, into their eyes over the, the means of Zoom or Skype or, whatever program anyone's using. So it was really lovely to be able to kind of, ease back into proper podcasting, I guess. Is that what we're calling it? I suppose so. And what better person to do that with than Sarah? She's an absolute delight, as you're about to find out. We talk about everything. And what we established quite quickly is that Sarah's got incredible taste in records. And we literally talk about most of my favourite bands. So it makes for a really ace chat. And you're going to hear it very, very soon. Just quickly, some thank yous. So thank you to Scroobius Pip and everybody at the Distraction Pieces Network. Thank you to 76 for producing this podcast. And thanks to you lot for the past 14 months of listening to these podcasts that have been done over Zoom. I'm sure there's still going to be many, many more that are done over Zoom. But it feels nice to be able to give you a podcast that is recorded in a room again. So. Also, if you'd like to support the podcast, there's loads of ways you can do it. The easiest way is just to tell your pals or give it a like, love, share or a retweet on the socials. Why not subscribe? That way you'll never miss an episode. Or if you'd like to get extra content, then why not head over to Patreon, Patreon, patreon.com/ Off the Beat and Track. And over there, I put up weekly shows, video episodes, playlists, like everything. So, and I think it costs you about 79p a month. So, peanuts. Go get stuck in over there. Other than that, also, if this is your first time listening, go and check out, once you've obviously finished this episode, go and check out all the back catalogue, because there's over 300 episodes now. You can hear chats with the likes of Foo Fighters, Motley Crue, Fatboy Slim. If you like your actors, then Molly Windsor, Amanda Abington, Maxine Peake, Michael Smiley, producers. No, I spoke to Nirvana's producer, Butch Vig, who also produced Smashing Pumpkins. Who else? Comedians, James Acaster, Ed Gamble, Jade Adams, like loads. Loads and loads. Maisie Adam. So, there's a bundle for you to get stuck into. So go and have a look in the archives, and I'm sure you'll find stacks of episodes that you're going to fancy giving a listen to. But you're here right now for this episode, and it gives me enormous pleasure to introduce it. Please enjoy Off the Beaten Track podcast with the wonderful Sarah Kaywood. Right, I've got to take a quick break in this podcast because I've got some super exciting news. Off the Beaten Track podcast is proud to go into partnership with the Cacao Bar from Hotel Chocolat. That's right. The Cacao Bar is not a chocolate bar. It's all the best bits of a chocolate bar put into a really exciting new alcoholic range. That's right. Gin, vodka, and a beautiful range of cream liqueurs. So one of the big bonuses of this partnership is obviously I'm super thrilled to have Hotel Chocolat working with us, but they sent me a great big box of this stuff. And I'm telling you, it's amazing. Go and check it out, www.hotelchocolat.com or over on the socials at Hotel Chocolat. But yeah, in the coming months, there's going to be opportunities for you to get involved with competitions with us, to win bottles of stuff. There's loads of exciting things coming soon, and I can't be more happy to say that this podcast is in partnership with the Cacao Bar from Hotel Chocolat. All right, let's get back to the podcast. It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network with me, Stu Whiffin. Okay, we are recording. Hi, Sarah.
Hello, Stu.
How are you doing? You all right?
I'm really well, thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, do you know what? This is super exciting because this is the first face-to-face podcast I have done in 14 months.
Really?
Yes.
Is it all your squad cast and your Zooms and everything? It's a bit tedious, isn't it?
And it's really strange. It's quite odd to be sitting opposite someone in front of microphones, which was everything it was. And the concept 14 months ago of doing that over Zoom and trying to forge a kind of connection with someone over a screen just felt so bizarre and alien.
Yeah.
And when I first started doing it, the first couple of episodes, I was just thinking, oh, this is not going to work. And then before you know it, the simplicity of it and the reach that it allowed you as well was really
and the
exciting.
Guests as well.
Completely.
Because they can be anywhere in the world and they can also, like, you can go for your slightly more, I've found that, you know, you're slightly higher up the food chain as celebs are happy to do it because they don't have to leave the house.
Absolutely.
And you haven't got to, you know, pay for their cabs.
Yeah, absolutely. But you live down the road.
I do live down the road. It took me about half an hour to get here, if that. And that's rush hour, technically. Mm.
And so you reached out about Pod Bible and your podcast, which we will definitely be talking about.
And I didn't connect the dots, did I? Because you'd asked me to do this like a few months ago. Yeah. And it was literally the penny dropped really slowly while we were talking about Pod Bible. And then you were like, oh, will you come on? And I was like, and I just, do you remember I said in a text exchange, didn't you ask me to be on this a few months ago? I tell you what, the menopause. We'll talk about it later.
Okay.
And we'll find out whether you're having the menopause too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, as a man. There is. Your hormones dip in men as well.
Oh,
in
this is interesting because, I mean, where we're recording this, we are in the Whiffin, which is basically...
The Whiffin. I love that.
Done that.
It's lovely in here.
This screams midlife crisis, this room. It's like all of the nostalgic things, all of my heroes, all of my... My favourite boxers, all of my retro Star Wars toys. It's like, it is one great big midlife crisis.
Oh my God,
crisis.
I can see them. I've got some epic things to show you that I sell
really?
That are Star Wars things.
Oh, right.
We'll talk about that later because it's like, it's network marketing. It's completely off topic, but yeah, I'll show you. Yeah, they're really nice. They're amazing. Sorry, I'm leaning away from the microphone to look.
All right, well.
Oh, wow.
I know you've prepped your songs and I know you said you was... You were still unsure on this one, and you was thinking about it on the way over, and searching the radio for inspiration as well. So, first track. I'll tell you what, before we even get on with that first track, have you found the last 13, 14 months as Sarah, mum and wife, and Sarah, worker?
It's been hideous as mum and wife. fucking hated homeschooling. Never again. I said to Andy recently, I said, if we go into another lockdown in September, if God forbid there's a vaccine, you know, one that's vaccine resistant, a strain, I said, I'm not doing it. I said, they can just repeat a year or be stupid because I'm not doing it. I am not fucking doing it. Hunter was all right. My eldest, he's like stupidly bright anyway. And that's not even a mum brag. He's just... annoyingly, I think he might have a slightly photographic memory, and he just finds things really easy. Yeah. He loves the QI books. He's always telling me random facts. Like today he said that it's not true that all the water in the world is recycled and has been over millions of years, which is what we've all been told. He said that some of it has gone missing, apparently. Apparently the sun burns up some of the water in the atmosphere, and then it burns into outside of our atmosphere, into the galaxy, and is lost forever.
How old's he?
He's 9.
Aren't you meant to be teaching him?
I know. He reads the QI. I said, where'd you find that out? QI. He reads all the QI books. But autumn was a nightmare. So mum and also I like my own company, Stu. I lived on my own in London for 10 years. And then before the pandemic, he's an edit producer, a TV edit producer. He's going into London to edit suites, to edit and coming. So I do the school run, come back, got a lovely day to myself. You know, Leon C, dreadfully white and middle class, but I wasn't a Lee lady who lunched. I would come home, do bits and pieces, you know, do my voiceovers, do a bit of networking, just get on with getting on. Yeah. And it was lovely. And that's all been taken away from me. And I don't like being in a house full of people all the time. It does my head in. But work-wise, we were very, very lucky. The pandemic was really kind to us. Andy could work from home, edit producing, and was just turning down jobs left, right and centre. And I got, I was doing some content creating for Creating Craft, and that was nice money, and I could do it with the kids. So it was like a double whammy of feeling like a good mum because I'd done crafting with the kids that day, but I'd also been paid for it.
Yeah, perfect.
And then I was doing my challenge voiceovers from home. The upstairs loft room, which has got a really low ceiling, is perfect for voice work. So I was doing all of that. Narrated a few Channel 5 cosmetic surgery nightmare star shows. And obviously we didn't have any outgoings.
Yeah.
You know, there was no commute into London anymore. So that side of it was really good. And that's where the podcast was born as well. We knew we were doing it. So yeah. I think we'd been into the podcast lounge for the production company we work with. Hello. So we'd been in a couple of times, but then we went into lockdown and we're doing it all on Squadcast and it was fine. And then it was easy to book guests because they were all at home. You're not going through someone's diary. Right at the beginning of the pandemic, we all had quite empty diaries, didn't we? It's only now that people have, let me check which Zoom I can fit you into in my Zoom timetable, isn't it? And yeah, and forgetting them as well. Have you forgot Zooms before? You'll literally be, I'll just be cleaning the loo and then go, fuck, I've got a Zoom. Andy, get my computer.
I literally had to drop my eldest to Thorpe Park on Monday morning. And so that's like a 3-hour round trip. And I was like, I stopped at a services on the way home just for a wee. And like, and I thought, I was quickly checking my phone and I just had a message going, I'm on Zoom, where are you, mate? And I thought, oh, fuck. I've just completely forgot about
Zoom. I put alerts on now. Mm. But sometimes I don't even see those.
Yeah.
I'm an idiot. So it's been all right, the pandemic. Well, we didn't lose anyone. Nobody, we all had COVID, but the elders of the family, so my in-laws and my parents, were all fine and came out the other side, and now they're all vaccinated. So hopefully the danger is, you know, because my dad would have been a goner. He's always got a fag in one hand and a glass of red wine in the other, and his heart tells him so. And he's nearly 80, so I think if he'd got COVID, it would have been the death of him. But yeah, so in that respect, I just feel really lucky. And it is nice to be at home. We've had lots of... I don't know whether you do this because you've got teenagers, so it's a different kettle of fish, but we went walking as a family in deep lockdown.
Yeah.
We'd just find the nearest woods.
We'd done
just
that drive, a lot.
And it was lovely. It was so nice. Mm. I mean, it's the Japanese call it nature bathing, don't they? And they prescribe it to people with depression. Really? Go and walk in nature. Nature bathing, yeah.
It was something because... we were chatting earlier, and my kids are like 18 and 16, and so to spend time with them is quite quite scarce now.
Yeah.
Like they sort of come in and rarely even open the sort of kitchen door and go, all right, they just come in and just go straight to
their
rooms. And it is is exactly that. And so during lockdown, obviously we was together a lot, which was tricky at times. I'm not going to say it was ideal. Mm. Of course it wasn't. It was, you know, when you've got, you know, two, you know, stressed out teenagers in the house, it's tricky.
Yeah.
And I'm the only kind of guy in the house. So a lot of the time I'd be hiding down here with the dog. Who'd come and hide down here with me. But then kind of just getting out and walking was really nice because it seems strange, but it was like when we'd be out there in the woods, just kind of like running around and just being stupid.
Yeah.
They kind of felt more childlike again.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
And I also think it's easier to just make conversation.
100%.
Like, because you don't really get your phone out and look at your phone while you're walking in the woods because you'd fall on your face.
Yeah.
So naturally, you know, devices are put away.
Yeah.
And you will, I always say to the kids, look up, look down, you know, just look. Don't just look ahead of you. Yeah. Like, look all around. Do a 360 because there's so much to see. 100%. But then it's just nice chatting. Just chit-chat.
Did you feel it helped, like, where you live near the sea? I mean, that's got to be nice to be able to go and have a walk by the sea.
Yeah, it was really lovely. I love living in Lee, though. It is so nice. But we were just saying, my only problem with it is it's perhaps not. I lived in Kilburn when I first moved to London, and then Camden for a long time, and then Crouch End. So I was getting slightly more, I was moving up the food chain. By the time I got to Crouch End, it's really quite middle class and she, and there's a Waitrose just down the road. But now it's the lack of diversity worries me a little bit, but that will change in time. Yeah. And I'm just making sure I raise my children to, you know, not think that this is their little bubble of middle class whiteness. So, yeah. But I love it. It is lovely. And the sea, like this morning, obviously it's estuary. People are always, my stepdad always goes, it's estuary, not sea. And I'm like, it's salty.
Yeah, it's salty.
Do you know at what point in the Thames it goes, oh, what's the word? I can't remember what the word is where it starts. Oh, brackish.
Brackish?
So brackish is where salts, river water and seawater start, so where it starts being salty. Do you know at what point in the Thames it gets brackish? You will never believe it if you guessed. So it's fully salty by the time you get to Leigh-on-Sea.
Go on.
Putney.
Fuck off.
Yeah. Brackish at Putney.
Wow.
I know. That's like West London. So by the time you've gone past the Millennium Dome, it's probably getting quite salty.
That's all that rowing. There's lots of rowing around Putney, isn't there?
Yeah.
Wow.
I know. I had to Google it.
I thought that would have been somewhere way different to that.
I know. That's where it starts mingling.
Brackish.
Yeah. But this morning on my run, because I like to get out and just have I'm not a runner, really. Everything creaks. My knees are knackered. But I like I like listening to podcasts, actually, on my run.
Oh, you listen to podcasts?
Yeah, I do. Or audio books as well. Yeah. But this morning the water was in and it was lapping. So I did a little story, Instagram, and I love that sound. Yeah, it's gorgeous.
Brilliant.
But estuary living, you know, you only get that about once a month.
Yeah. Well, let's start the playlist. And for track one, Sarah, I'm going to ask you, please, for the song that you regard as having the greatest ever intro.
Oh, this is so hard to do. I can't believe
it. You can have some honourable mentions.
I've definitely honourable mentions. Honourable mention number one, Losing My Religion by R.E.M.
Okay.
I mean, what's not to love about a mandolin, right? A mandolin riff?
My favourite band.
Really? One of mine. Up there, definitely. And Michael Stipe was the exec producer on Velvet Goldmine. I was in it.
Did you meet Michael Stipe?
Yeah. So I've got a couple of photographs that he took of me that he gave me at the rap party in my den that he took. He was taking loads of on-set photographs. He came up and gave them me at the end.
Was he nice?
He was lovely on the set of Velvet Goldmine. And then I bumped into him in LA a few years later and he was really rude. So go figure.
It's really weird because I know quite a few people that have met him that have said things that aren't that nice about him.
Yeah.
And he's like, he's a big, big deal for me. Growing up, you know, in the time I did that album at that time and, you know, introduced me to that band. And oh my God, they soundtracked like a big part of my life. And now you think, Don't Meet Your Heroes. And yeah. I think that's the one that I just think...
Oh, yeah, he was lovely, and then he kind of... But also, imagine... I mean, it was in a club, and I went up and went, oh, do you remember me? I was in Velvet Goldmine, took this... And he's probably, you know, just wanting to have a chat with his mates. And so I sort of get it. I didn't ask to join them or anything. Like, oh, I didn't just join them. I literally just leaned over and said, hello, Michael. And I didn't take it personally. It was fine. But that is gorgeous. A lot of their intros are lovely. The other one is I want to be adored by the Roses. It's just that the way it builds.
Yeah.
I just think it's just gorgeous. And then I've got one more before the big one. Okay. So, and these two, it was a toss up. Like, which one do I go for?
Right.
And then I heard one of them on the radio on the way here, and I was like, okay, that's the kicker. That's the one. So, but it was between Sweet Child of Mine and the one I actually chose. Cause Sweet Child of Mine is just, I mean, I was a massive Guns N' Roses fan. Yeah. Appetite for Destruction. So I must have been 15 when I bought that, and I just thought I was the coolest thing ever. But it was cinched by How Soon Is Now by the Smiths, because that wah, wah, is just epic. And then Zoe Ball played it on the way here, and I whacked it right up on the A13. I was like, this is amazing. And I know Morrissey's a twat, but we'll park that. I remember going to Reading when he headlined. It was just after he put his first solo album out, and there were whisperings backstage. It was like, he's going to open with How Soon Is Now. He's going to be out front. Be high, have come up on your pill by then, or time it so that you might come up on your pill by then. So we were all like absolutely buzzing for it. And then we went out, and it's just, I can't remember who was playing guitar for him, but it was just that, wah, wah, and the whole place went nuts. And it was amazing. So
it's
that's the one.
It's a absolutely incredible, incredible intro. Yeah, it's really strange. I mean, I'm obsessed.
Like, but don't you feel so let down by the absolute? But Andy, my husband, has a theory that a lot of these people, these wonderful musicians, would have turned into absolute tools. He thinks that John Lennon was a shoo-in for turning into an absolute twat.
100%.
And Kurt Cobain, very possibly, could have turned into a bit of a twat. So, you know. Obviously, we didn't want to lose them that early, but I'm glad we lost them before they turned into twats, if that was what was going to happen. Whereas Morrissey is just an embarrassment now, you know.
It breaks my heart. Mm. It's like, and it's because everything that you thought he was...
He wasn't.
He wasn't. Yeah. And it's like, when you're that angst-ridden teen, Morrissey is everything you need in your life.
Yeah.
And like... And then all of a sudden...
He's just a curmudgeon now, isn't he? He's bloody Alf Garnett.
He really is. And it breaks my heart. It really does. And, you know, because... I mean, thank the gods for Johnny Marr. Because,
I know. Who has always done fabulous things since then. And is just an epic human being as well.
How Soon Is Now is my ringtone. Like,
is it really?
Not that people still have ringtones. I never have my phone on. Like, it's always on, like, quiet anyway. But it is... It is my ringtone, and it is an absolutely monumental song. So with that in mind, when guests pick the Smiths, which does happen quite a lot because they're the Smiths, and when a lot of guests pick Michael Jackson, with that in mind, can you separate the music from the artist? Can you listen to... The Smiths now, but not Morrissey's solo stuff.
Yeah, I can listen. But what I tend to do is apportion it to Marr, I think. Yeah. So I think more of it as being Marr heavy. So, I mean, that riff is all him, isn't it, on How Soon Is Now. So you can do. I was never a Michael Jackson fan, although I do can see the merits of Off the Wall. Yeah. You know, it is amazing. But I don't know. It's shades of darkness, though, isn't it? It's like if the rumours about Jacko are true, then that's true darkness.
Yeah.
Morrissey is just a dirty, ignorant old man, you know, a horrible racist. But, you know, that's hopefully about it, just a curmudgeon.
Yeah.
But if I found out that he was a pedo,
yeah,
I'd probably have problems listening to him. Do you know what I mean?
Really weird, just as a DJ and...
Well, Radio 2 don't play Michael Jackson now, really, very much, unless it's like Tracks of My Years or something like that. Yeah. They try not to. You don't hear him like you used to.
So weird. And it's the same with you know, when I mean, there was the writing was on the wall with Morrissey. I know when. What was the track he put out? The National Front Disco, I think it was, like, early doors, and there was lots of... And I was at the Madness gig when he come out with the Union Jack, and there was all kinds of stuff being sort of thrown out about him then, and you just... At that point, I was like, don't be stupid, it's Morrissey.
I know.
You know, he fights for us.
And also, yeah, he was flying the flag for, you know, for troubled gay teens back in the 80s, wasn't he? It was like, he was like... He was making it okay to be gay.
Absolutely. And so that's what I just think makes it so strange now.
I know, it's odd, isn't it? Maybe he's just having a joke on us all.
Yeah.
But it's funny, isn't it? Because, you know, Lemmy was, you know, had Nazi memorabilia. He used to collect it. And for some reason, that was okay.
Yeah.
It's weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
Maybe it's because we always knew all along. And because he was a scary mofo.
Yeah, I don't know. There's kind of... That whole, like, if you look at the, you know, how people have made absolute legends out of, you know, people like Nikki Sixx and these people from these kind of, and like Motley Crue. And I've had Tommy on here and he was delightful.
Aww.
But what them books allude to them doing...
Oh, with absolute denigration of women.
Like,
although, as a woman, I mean, because I was on that spandex. I mean, I was a little bit younger, so I wasn't on the LA kind of hookers and heroin scene necessarily that, you know, that you read about in the dirt. Yeah. I was, but I went to see Motley Crue and I was around a lot of those spandex rock bands and I never saw any misogyny. They were always so respectful.
Really?
Yep. I was, you know, nobody ever tried to take advantage of me. Nobody felt me up. Nobody asked me to take drugs with them. You never saw drug taking. There was a lot of Jack Daniels being drunk. There was a lot of leather being worn. But there was, I mean, maybe it was just because I didn't actually meet Motley Crue. And by the time they toured, they were all sober. So that it all changed by then. But I was really lucky. And I just think you have to be, I'm not saying that what, it was of its time.
Yeah.
It was strippers. It was pole dancers and cocaine and all-night sex parties. And it was consensual.
Yeah.
I think. That's what I'm trying to say. And times have changed. You couldn't get away with what they wrote, The Dirt. Like, when you read it, it's so shocking because we've come so far since then. But it was of its time.
Yeah. And I think, you know, what you said you experienced... The media aren't going to be interested in that, are they? They want the dirt.
Yeah. Like, I was on that scene and I was like 18, 19, going to the Limelight on a Wednesday for rock night. And I was always in the VIP room. I was behind, you know, behind the velvet rope. I was really lucky. And I was the most famous virgin in London. And I remember John Colodner, who was Aerosmith's producer, saying, oh, so you're the virgin, you know, and not one, you'd think that would be like throwing a gauntlet down.
Yeah.
No one ever tried. No one ever pushed. No one ever cajoled. No one ever felt me up. Nobody ever went, go on, you know, nothing like that. In fact, if anything, they were very respectful.
Right, we'll get on to clubbing. We'll get on to clubbing a little bit later. But first, I'm going to ask you, I'm going to take you back now, Sarah, and I'm going to ask you, please, to tell me the first song you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you, please.
It will have been an ABBA song.
Okay.
Because I am a massive ABBA fan. But I also was raised on ABBA. So my best friend, Celia, I used to go to her parents we used to have Plowman's every Saturday and I spend the day with Celia and they always played loads of ABBA. But also my parents divorced the first time when I was 7. And I think that must have been around the time of Knowing Me, Knowing You, walking through an empty house, tears in my eyes. Well, I remember the house being empty because, you know, I was going with Mum, Dad was going off with somebody else. And so they had a real emotional impact and continue to do so. Like, there's an ABBA song called Move On, which is amazing. If you listen to the words now, they're quite, excuse me, they're quite indicative of what we've all just been through. Like a roller in the ocean, life is motion, move on. It's just amazing. And then, obviously, I mean, you are a father of two girls, right? And I have a daughter. And Slipping Through My Fingers is impossible to listen to without crying when you have a girl. You know, so, and there's Winner Takes It all of those, just all of, and I think they must all be in a minor key, but I just think Benny and Bjorn had a way of just tapping into it, like Happy New Year's, another one, can't listen to that every Christmas without crying. So all of those ABBA songs still, even now, will make me cry if I listen to them.
So you're not picking one, you're just literally picking all of the ABBA songs.
I could probably, I should think probably knowing me, knowing you, which yeah. really reminds me of my parents divorcing, which actually I was okay with. But, you know, I mean, it's never going to be a wonderful thing, is it? Yeah. But I remember, it's just that line, walking through an empty house, and I can remember the house. You know, I remember everything being out of the house and it just being echoey and weird. Yeah. And it was like, that's family life done then. You're seven, that's it. It's moving on to something new.
So where was the house? Where was home?
In a village called Caster, which is near Peterborough. And Peterborough is, it has lovely bits, it has nasty bits, but the surrounding countryside's really nice. And I went to school, Stanford High School for Girls, darling, in Stanford. And Stanford looks like a baby bath. I mean, it's such a picturesque little Georgian town. And I was born and raised around there, but moved to London when I was 17 to go to the Royal Ballet School. And then lived in London till 5 years ago.
Yeah.
So London, really, I guess.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
It's the place I've lived more than anywhere else.
And then formative years to sort of 16, like, happy place to grow up?
Yes, it really was. And I loved school and I was very studious. And like I said, I was never really affected by my parents splitting up. They remarried when I was 11, which was mortifying.
Oh, remarried? Oh, right.
Each other, yeah. I was like, I had to go to the wedding and it was like... Because they were all like cooing over each other. I was like, it's like walking on and your parents having sex. Do you know what I mean? You just never quite get over it. And then divorced again when I was 19, by which time I'd left home and I really couldn't have given two fucks what was going on in their marriage. I had my own shit to deal with by then.
So. Well, you just touched on school then. So let's talk about track three. Just quickly, Angel Eyes by ABBA will break me
time I hear it. And Under Attack.
Oh.
And they used always, like, the men that I was crushing on. Until I met my husband, it was always Under Attack and Angel Eyes. There's one particular guy that those two songs really remind me of.
All right, so school.
Yeah.
Tell me the song that reminds you of your time at school, please, Sarah.
The song that... Oh, there are two.
Okay.
So I'll give you the runner-up first. Right. Living on a Prayer.
Of course.
Because we all used to get on the dance floor and it just was like all of us holding hands, arms aloft, and Never Say Goodbye as well became a little bit, because it was Never Say Goodbye when we left school. I think it was when the girls went on to sixth form, but I left to go to Royals. So Never Say Goodbye was just before that. And it does what it says on the can. It was like, let's never say goodbye. But the other one is Stand By Me.
Perfect.
Because the film came out, and I can even quote you the last line. It says, I'll never have friends like the ones I had when I was 12. Jesus, does anyone? School days. I know. And and when he does that at the end, it always makes me cry. I'm like, oh, I love that film. So Stand By Me, although I can't watch the puking scene. Even now, the pie eating, can't watch that. I have to leave the room. Go, tell me when it's finished. It makes me feel so ill.
They're one of them ones that I've sat with my kids and gone, right, okay, so today we're going to do Breakfast Club.
It's a right, I love the Breakfast Club.
But they're just like, they're watching and just like, yeah. And I'm like, no.
They might, you know, it might come in time. You might find, because I don't think Yeah, maybe in their 20s. Or it'll take for a boyfriend or someone to say, what, your dad showed you the Breakfast Club and it didn't blow your tiny mind?
I know.
And so maybe that will happen. But
that period around then of Benny King and Stand By Me, so that would have been, I think, maybe 87?
Yeah, I mean, it was a jeans advert, wasn't it?
So this is the thing, mm-hmm. It was like...
It was the 501 advert.
We saw that year... Percy Sledge re-released mm-hmm. When a Man Loves a Woman, because of obviously Nick Kamen, we got...
Marvin Gaye, Heard It Through the Grapevine.
And I think Wonderful World, Sam Cooke was a 501 advert.
Yeah.
It just seemed to be Jackie Wilson re-released.
Reap Teat, that went to number one, didn't it? Yeah.
It was just a big sort of re-release of all of these kind of like iconic records. But I can still picture... River Phoenix.
I loved him. Like, I cried so much when Mum rang me and told me he died. And I listened to a podcast the other day. I don't know if you've listened to, Disgraceland. You must have listened to Disgraceland. You'd love it, Stu. It's basically, it's by an American called Jake Brennan. And he does the podcast. It's a bit like an audiobook. So mm-hmm. It's all rock stars that have disgraced themselves. So it's all, you know, like Motley Crue, obviously the story of Motley Crue. I can't think offhand, but the latest one that he's done is called Hollywoodland.
Right.
And the first one was River Phoenix and the second one was Marilyn. So I've just listened to those two. So that's all the Hollywood sticky ends. And then, so Disgraceland, he did two-parter on Kurt and Courtney. He's done, I mean, name me some... Oh, Sid and Nancy, he did them. So it's called Disgraceland and it's just great, really great storytelling.
Oh, I am all over
that. It's really good. And he did one, and I won't tell you why I felt I had to DM him, but he did one on John Denver mm-hmm. and the supposed rumour that John Denver had something to do with the JFK assassination. You have to listen to the John Denver episode. And then I felt afterwards, I can't give anything away because it's a massive spoiler, but at the end I actually had to DM Jake and he did get back to me. I was like, oh my, but his storytelling is wonderful. He writes it all and he scores it all and it's really, really clever.
Was John Denver a bit of a racist? I remember like...
Possibly. I mean, he was in, because they basically reckon that he was a sniper for the army. And they reckon that he had something to do with JFK's death. Honestly, if you Google John Denver sniper, it will come up. It's like all of those conspiracy theories, it will come up.
How do I not know this? I am all over
I didn't until I listened to this episode of Disgraceland. But they're absolutely brilliant. And there's loads of rappers on there as well because Trouble just follows them around. Mm. And so he does Snoop Dogg and Biggie Smalls, all of that. Honestly, it's such a great podcast.
Benny King, I mean, that song is just different level beautiful as well. And just picturing him, like River and Benny King at the end, they're just dancing together, aren't they?
Yeah.
And they're all kind of sort of, there's kind of like an audience in the video, isn't there? And they're cutting shots from the filming and like to Benny King and River and I can't think what the actor's name
was. Will Wheaton.
Yes. Like, God, what a film.
And Kiefer Sutherland giving it best nasty guy, isn't it? Yeah, it's just like... And also, it is hot, sticky summers playing on the streets with your friends, and that never gets old, you know. Yeah. I'm sure that even my kids will have hot, sticky summer memories, you know.
You don't want to be walking down the railway lines at Leon Seat or Westcliff to see a dead body, though, do you?
No, although it wouldn't surprise me if there was one down there, do you know what I mean?
Listen up. I've only got another new sponsor. Egg Fried. It's this super cool clothing label. And if you're into sort of skating and street art and gigging and kind of like really cool art and throwing a little bit of Asian culture and the designer's kind of weird sense of humour in the mix, then you're pretty much there with the wonderful world that is eggfried.com. Now, they do these amazing punchy kind of graphic tees, hoodies and sweatshirts, beautiful art prints, as well as this. They have a denim range, all handmade in-house, all supporting the slow fashion movement. Not only that, they've given you a discount code, 10% off when you head over to eggfried.com. Just use the code EGGSALAD, EGGSALAD, save 10%. Go and get lost in the world of Egg Fried. Also, they've got a new kids range. And it's called Small Fried. And it's super cool, super cute. And again, it's all over there in this wonderful world. Go and get involved at eggfried.com. Well, tell me about school. You said you were studious. But you also mentioned that you then went to the London School of Ballet.
Yeah.
So throughout school. Well, first of all, then, what did you want to be when you was at school?
Famous. Isn't that, it's really sad. Cause but I hate that, because I was like reality shows, like these days, kids, they don't want to have a craft. They just somehow want to get famous. Yeah. So they'll go, oh, just be on TOWIE or whatever. And I always feel like, you know, be famous for something. Sure. But I've got a rough book where it says, you know, one of my friends had written a load of, what do you want to be? Oh, I think it might be in our yearbook. And I say, I want to be famous. But I was doing ballet and I decided that was the medium by which I was going to be famous. Now, I was never going to be Margot Fonteyn. I was quite an average ballet dancer. So how the fuck I thought it would make me famous is beyond me. But I loved it. And I guess I meant, maybe I meant famous in that I would just get to go on a stage and perform, which I did do. I was a professional dancer for a while.
Was you confident?
Yeah, I've always been pretty confident. I was very lucky. And actually, when I got kicked out of the Royal Ballet School, Dame Merle Park, who was the headmistress there, she went, I see you on television, Sarah. And I was furious with her for being right when I eventually ended up on TV. Yeah. I was like, she was fucking right. When I was 18, that bitch was gonna kick me out of her school, broke my heart, and was right.
Why'd you get kicked out?
Because I wasn't good enough.
Oh, right.
Yeah, yeah, it was. It used to be called an assessment, and they'd work out whether you were sort of had staying power or not. But by that time, I'd discovered spandex rock. So yeah. I was cutting school to go and see Skid Row, the Choir Boys, you know, all of those bands. And also, the Royal Ballet School back then was just about a 10-minute walk from the Hammersmith Odeon. So I'd go, Sveli would come in, my Katia Svelibilova, our horrible Czech ballet teacher, she'd swear at me and tell me I was shit and tell me to get out of class. So I'd go and I'd walk down the road and go and hang around outside stage door and go and have a chat with the choir boys. It's far more interesting.
It's a lot more fun to me. Ballet, especially at the level that you was dancing at, is ridiculously competitive.
Oh, it really is, yeah.
And you then moved into the world of television, which is ridiculously competitive. How driven would you say you are?
Well, obviously I must have been, but I don't feel like it. And I hate the disappointment. You know, it's like, it's horrible. I've had my heart broken by things, not people. By people too. But ballet broke my heart. Being kicked out of Royal was devastating. When I got in, it was like this huge celebration. And a year later, I had to go back to all those people I'd left school to go to Royal with and go, I just got kicked out. And then I went to Arts Ed, which was just down the road and was a fantastic school. So that was really good move for me. But and then obviously telly, your flavour of the month, and then you're not, and then you are, and then you're not. And that was really brutal as well. But I just think, you know, honestly, Stu, I was quite lucky. I think I was mismanaged in telly. I don't think I ever had, my agents were all lovely. But, and actually it might have been, I'm the one that says yes or no to things. But I went out with one of the Blue Tones for a long time, and Adam was the guitarist was never comfortable with me doing lads mag shoots, and Mark, the lead singer, said that he would never speak to me again if I did one. So I was too terrified to do the Loaded, the GQ, all of those. Kat Dealey was doing them, Zoe Ball was doing them, Sarah Cox was doing them, Lisa Snowden was doing them. They've all still got careers because their profiles, as a result of being those, you know, beautiful girls on ladettes, but, you know, get the tits out happily. And, you know, look at Gail as well. I mean, how famous was she after the FHM thing? And I didn't do it. So I sort of missed that boat a little bit. Yeah. And so I don't think I ever quite had the profile that those girls had. And so, yeah, perhaps didn't reach the dizzying heights that they did. But I do genuinely think that all things happen for a reason. And I'm happier now than I've ever been. And I sell bloody scented wax. Do you know what I mean? So, go figure.
Yeah, and that's not cool that the person you was with,
you know. he wasn't controlling at all. He was lovely. He just didn't like the idea of other men looking at my tits, which is fine. But it was Mark that was like the real, but he's the boss of that band, always was. He was like, you know, it wasn't his band, but we basically did what Mark said. So, you know, he was like, I'll never speak to you again. And I didn't want that sort of bad feeling. And actually, In their defence, it was up to me as well. And I remember thinking that, in order to quantify it, I remember thinking that I was clearly a much better person than all those other girls because I wasn't getting my tits out to get ahead, you know. But actually now I just think it's not, you know, it's actually not that simple. I don't. Nobody was hiring Kat Deely just because she was all over the Lads Mag shoot covers. Yeah. They were hiring her because she was good at her job as well.
Yeah.
And she was doing it on her terms. But I remember thinking that, you know, I was a bit more feminist than they were because I refused to do it. And then, of course, when Adam and I split up, I did. Mm. I went straight to Loaded. I went, go on then, have them. Let's do this. Where's the good underwear?
So how did you get into telly? What was the sort of transition point from...
I got spotted in a dance audition by somebody who worked at Nickelodeon, by David Rose, who was the head of live at Nickelodeon. And I was dancing, I was auditioning for a dance agency, the kind of agency that hired dancers for Boyzone and Take That and what have you. So I was doing that, and David's wife, Kathy, spotted me, and they asked me in for a screen test, and I got a job there in 94.
Okay.
I'd just come out of Phantom of the Opera. And, yeah, it was so anarchic. It was just brilliant. There were about six Nickelodeon presenters. We were in the Trocadero, in a little studio in the Trocadero, not dissimilar from this, but glass, you know. Yep. And it was just wonderful. Then we moved, and that's obviously Viacom owned, MTV owned. So then we moved to big premises, and it got a bit bigger. And then I got poached by John Nahr Management, poached me from my then agent, who was quite a small agent, and got me auditioned for The Girly Show. And the rest, as they say.
Well, so, just tell me about, like, if you're happy to talk about that.
Yeah.
Like, how was that point at that time? Because so many people, you know, that I've spoke to that were in bands from you know, from that time. Mm. And I was, you know, we're the same age. And, and I was DJing. I was in bands at that point. And it did feel, personally speaking, it felt like a really good time. And
when you see wonderful
documentaries, they always paint it as this moment for a couple of years where it was the Euros and but it was.
It really was. I know, and we must annoy people waxing lyrical about it. In fact, Fern's doing a special, Sounds of the 90s, on Radio 2 on 1996. Yes. And I just have, I mean, there was always drama. There was always a drama. I mean, Coxie nicked off with my boyfriend when we were doing The Girly Show together.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but she did me a favour because I ended up then meeting Adam, you know, Adam Devlin, and going out with Adam for 6.5 years. Yeah. So it was, you know, it was fine. The atmosphere on set wasn't wonderful for a few weeks, but it was really good times, and they were really kind of wonderful. I mean, God, the amount of drugs I took was, I mean, it was ridiculous. But even that, when you look back, there was nothing sleazy about it because everybody was doing it. Yeah. We were all off our faces on pills in fields, and it was just a really quite an innocent, lovely time. Well, they say that 1987 was the second summer of love, don't they? And I just think so, right from that kind of line in the sand, then right through till, you know, 97, similar sort of thing. It was all good times, good music, good vibes. You know, Great Britain was amazing. Liam and Patsy were in bed covered by a Union Jack on the cover of GQ, and we were happy.
Yeah. Do you know what?
And the sun seemed to shine every single day, didn't it, that
summer?
Sure
it didn't, but it did.
Yeah.
But, it was just a very, very strange time. And how did you, Sarah, the girl that wanted to be famous, when she was famous, how did that deliver what you wanted it to?
I don't think I took much notice, to be honest. I was so happy, like, just,
well,
I was in
love.
I was in love. It was just, but yeah, it was, I don't think I ever went, I've done it. And I never, but I've always been, and this is going to sound really arrogant, it's not meant to, but I've always been quite down to earth about it. Like, people will go, occasionally back then, people would be like, oh my God, Sarah Cambridge, you're amazing. And I'd be like, I'm really not. I'm just dead normal like you. And I thought it was really important to just not have a fucking ego. I can't bear it when famous people get above themselves. It really pisses me off. And that probably didn't help me staying famous because, as on the Velvet Goldmine poster, the tagline for the movie is, the secret to becoming a star is knowing how to behave like one. Yeah. And I never behaved like one. I just behaved like, I never used to notice people recognising me in the street. If people did come up, I always used to, like, I'd give them a cuddle. I'd be like, oh, give us a hug, you know. I was always very approachable and dead normal, really. Yeah. I was uncomfortable with feeling I was better than other people. That really, so that's why, that's the bit of fame I didn't quite agree with was that you kind of have this perception of somehow being other or better than man on the street, and I don't think that's true.
A lot of people.
Everyone
get that,
shit stinks, Stu. Yeah. Everyone shit stinks.
Completely. Well, last song for the sort of formative years.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you, please, to tell me the song. The first song you bought from a record store.
Oh God, this is really embarrassing.
It's got to be. No one was cool when I was.
It was Now Those Days Are Gone by Bucks Fizz.
Oh.
I bloody love Bucks Fizz.
Fucking hell! Oh, it's in the room next door. I want to shout. I've got a Bucks Fizz mug.
I did Total Wipeout with Cheryl, and now we're Facebook friends, and I know her real name's Rita, and it was honestly, I got drunk one night in Buenos Aires.
You told me that her real name's Rita.
Her real name's Rita. She doesn't make a secret of it.
Oh.
Yeah, she changed it.
I literally...
She's wonderful.
...had Jay Aston lined up to do this, and she got COVID.
Bless her, because she had cancer, didn't she, as well?
Yeah.
It's the you've got.
There's nothing embarrassing about the fizz.
Oh no, I love it. And because I, so 81 Eurovision May, so I was just shy of my 9th birthday, and then Now Those Days Are Gone must have been a year, 18 months, maybe even two years later. But I love them. I've got Are You Ready? I've got loads of singles, but I've
Land
got the
of
two.
Believe.
I've got. I bought sure. Land of Make Believe as well. Yeah. Oh my God, I love them. Macamara. My camera never lies anymore. When I had a massive crush on Mike Nolan, he was probably my first
they
ever crush.
They had brilliant hair. I always wanted hair like them. It was like proper like...
Yeah.
You don't... Well, people don't have hair like that anymore, but it was like, that's such cool hair.
And it was proper Lego hair, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But it was also, going back to my friend Celia that I mentioned earlier, so this was the Saturday spent at Celia's house with her family, and I was like their kind of third daughter. There was Victoria and Celia and I, and we were... I think, looking back, it was when my parents were separating, so I think Judy and John were sort of doing my mum a turn by saying, well, we'll have Sarah, and I just didn't notice that that was the way it was, but I was always round there. And I used to make poor Celia... Where we had kilts with that used to do up at the side, and we'd do them very loosely, and I always used, and I had ballet skirt on underneath, and I used to make her be Mike or Bobby and rip the skirt off me.
Was she Cheryl or Jane?
Always Cheryl.
Always
Cheryl. I actually messaged her at Euro, because obviously you see all the clips around Eurovision time, and this year I WhatsApped her, she's in Australia now, and went, I'm listening to I'm Making Your Mind Up, and I'm really sorry I made you be Mike or Bobby, I feel really bad about it now. And she just messaged back and went, yeah, bloody bitch. She was like, I too in Australia I'm having a moment. So it was really nice, because we never speak anymore, but you know, just to know that she had those really nice memories too was lovely.
I think, like, the impact of, like, Bucks Fizz on people of our age is undeniable. And, like, and I'm not suggesting they're radio for a second, right? But Eurovision was, like, the biggest thing on the fucking planet then.
And my brother was babysitting, and he sent me to bed when the results were coming in.
Yeah.
But I remember creeping down and looking around the corner. And then, so I saw them win, and he didn't realise that I had. And then I was upstairs jumping up and down in my bed and going nuts. And he was coming up and going, get to bed. I was like, we won! Yes! And I was just, because they were just... I mean, the amount of kids that must have just loved them. They were like a UK ABBA for
Absolutely.
Me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They, my Leavers Disco from my junior school, the second to last track was Land of Make Believe.
Yeah.
And I remember, like, just dancing and thinking, well, I'm like, all the girls were crying, and I was thinking, like, see, I think I'm going to cry. And I was thinking, don't cry, like, because none of the boys were crying, but I was thinking, I really want to cry. And then they put on Star Maker by the Crimson
Pain. Oh, God, Lights Out London.
Game over, that was it. Like, last song of the night, Star Maker by the Crimson Pain. Bits, mate.
So like, I remember, I've still got that 7-inch at home.
Oh, what a track.
Yeah.
What a track.
And they're all dressed in not Victorian garb. I think it's like Edwardian or something on the cover. They've got like parasols and the girls look amazing. I can see that. And it got played to death.
Oh, wonderful. I'm glad I'm not alone there. Okay, so let's move forwards. And for track five, I'm going to ask you, please, sir, tell me, the song reminds you of your time clubbing?
Inspiral Carpet Saturn V.
Oh,
you know
sure.
why?
High five that one.
Yes, every time. I tell you for why. We used to go to Smashing.
Yeah.
So I met my... I've got some really good friends. I hardly see them anymore, but they were mates with mainly with Graham Coxon, but they were mates with Menswear. And I met them at the Reading Festival because I'd had a falling out with a friend of mine who'd literally left me on my own at Reading. But I had backstage passes, and it was back in those heady days that we were talking about earlier. I just got chatting to Retz in the bar at the Ramada Hotel, like later on up when after the festival finished we all head back to the Ramada, and she was with Simon White, the guitarist in Menswear, and we got chatting and they really took me under their wing. And then this was pre-mobile phones. I remember them ringing my landline the next week and saying
Menswear.
No, Retz, this is right. their friends. So there was Retz, Henrietta, Retz, Bacall, Nikki and Gracie and Lily. And Retz rang and went, we're all going to the mixer because I lived in Camden. Do you want to come down and meet us this Friday? So I went down. It was a hot summer's evening. Everyone's on the street outside. Simon was there and we had a bit of a flirtation and I met Bacall for the first time. And it was just wonderful. And then so those girls then took me into the Britpop scene. So I'd come from sort of grunge and all of that, and I moved seamlessly into the Britpop scene, which was wonderful. Being in Camden at that time was magical. And we used to go to Smashing I don't even know what day of the week
Tuesday.
It was it Tuesday? Yeah. Anyway, we were always there. But whatever we were doing, whatever drugs we were taking in the toilet, whatever person we were chatting up, if Saturn V came on, we would go meet on that dance floor, the pulp dance floor that's in Disco 2000, because that's where that video was shot. And they're all in that video as well, all of those girls. And we'd all just converge on each other, just throw our arms around each other, and then 3 minutes of sheer bliss, Saturn V.
It's really weird, because you know that Johnny and Chris are from round here?
Really?
From Menswear.
Yes, I did know that. I did know that, yeah.
So I knew Chris. Chris was in the grunge era. Chris was in a band called Smear, and he had this long red hair.
Uh-huh.
And then I didn't see him. He said, I'm moving to London with Johnny. And then I didn't see him. And then all of a sudden, I opened Select magazine.
And there he was.
Ace Face Mod on a scooter. And
I know.
What's happened here?
And what did they used to call them? The Indie Take That, didn't they? Sky Magazine, I think, called them the Indie Take That.
So I'm going to tell you my Britpop story, right?
Yeah.
And it was outside the Good Mixer. I'd gone down there to... We'd gone to watch the Cardigans at Dingwalls.
Awesome! I bet we were all the same gigs, Stu.
And then I went to the Mixer, because you went to the Mixer for a
beer. Of course you did.
And I was outside, and it was the night that Blur had done Top of the Pops for Country House.
Uh-huh.
And I see Chris. And so I was chatting to Chris. And at the time, my peroxide blonde hair. Uh-huh. And these hands come over my eyes from behind me.
Uh-huh.
And this bloke kissed me and thought I was Robbie Williams.
Uh-huh.
And so I've just kind of pushed this guy off. And it was an absolutely fucking wrecked Graham Coxon. And then I was just like, fucking hell, it's Graham Coxon. So I was like super starstruck. And then ended up like having a drink with Graham Coxon. I was like, this is mad, because he was friends with Chris. And
yeah, well, that's because he was the one of Blur. I never saw the other members of Blur. We used to come, Alex used to drink occasionally where we used to drink, but it was always Graham and Menswear and us. And that was our little unit. It was lovely because Graham lived around the corner from my friend Bacall.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a really, really nice time. I love Gray.
So it gets more Britpop.
Really?
It's
not even peak Britpop yet.
No. So on the way home, we drive past Food Records.
Uh-huh.
And outside Food Records was this like A-frame for sale sign saying for sale, Blur, Country House. Like they've done this promo thing right at the top of the building. So my mate drove his car onto the pavement and he got on the roof and I got on his shoulders and I ripped it off the building.
Epic.
And we cut it in half because there was two.
Yeah.
He had one, I had one. That Saturday, watching the chart show, Country House number one.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember, he used to put a little sort of fax halfway through the song.
Yes.
And it come up that the for sale sign had been stolen from the Food Record builders. I was sitting in my room going,
yes, that's the equivalent. That's a Britpop equivalent of stealing a bloody traffic cone when you're a student, isn't it?
Oh, brilliant.
Andy Ross would be awesome on this. Oh, you should get him on.
He'd be great, wouldn't
he? He's such a lovely man as well. I've got a lot of time for Andy. So
it was really weird because he had a show on Boogaloo Radio. And I had...
Yeah, because I was a guest on that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. In fact, when I walked in here, I was like, I think I said to you, this reminds me of Andy Ross's little get-up. It's at the back of the Boogaloo. It's really similar to this.
Because McGee's on there. I went on, Alan came on, and he was just... For me, of that era, speaking to Alan McGee, it'd be the same speaking to Andy Ross. It was just like, they were the people that you'd hope to see in the mixer. And when you got your demo tape on, you're going to have a listen.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Brilliant. All right. Well, look, I'm gonna take you home for track six, and I'm going to ask you, please, to tell me your favourite song from an artist from your home county, please.
Now, you see, this Essex is not my home county.
Okay.
But I'm going to say that it is because it is now. This is home. This is where I'm raising my children. And I'm going to go, because me and Andy had to discuss this last night, because I think we're very spoilt for choice with Essex.
You really are.
Which is part of the reason why I ditched Cambridgeshire. Because I don't have a fucking clue who's from Cambridgeshire or from Peterborough. Oh, Erasure, I think. That's probably about all we've got in our locker. So I'm going to go Essex. Yeah.
One half of Erasure.
Yeah, one
the other half from Essex.
Exactly. Oh, so then I feel even better about my decision to say Depeche Mode.
Oh.
And enjoy the silence, which is just...
Perfection.
Yeah, I absolutely love it. And I just think, I didn't even know that they were from Essex until my plumber, Andy, came round recently I think it was a couple of years ago. He's like, oh, you know that they used to drink in the same pub as me in Basildon. I was like, what? So he said, oh, yeah, I saw them when there was about three men and his dog in there. And I was like, this is amazing!
Go on YouTube and put Depeche Mode Pink Toothbrush and you can watch them on there playing at the Brush.
Amazing.
They were a resident band. So, when...
That's better than The Doors being the resident band at the Whiskey, isn't it?
Of course it is. Yeah. version. there's some really mad footage. Danny Baker was down there for the 6 o'clock show.
Uh-huh.
And he's interviewing Depeche Mode. And at the time, the Brush was called Crocs.
Right.
Because we had a crocodile in the club.
Uh-huh.
And the crocodile's walking about the dance floor. And Danny Baker's there looking a little bit sheepish. But, Depeche Mode, they're like...
Yeah. Because obviously you are spoilt for choice because you've got Blur down the road in Colchester. And, I mean, there's loads, isn't there? Why do I want to say... The Horrors? Aren't the Horrors from round here as well?
Thing.
Yeah. Bloody loads. But I just think it's particularly that song. Because I don't think I possess a Depeche Mode LP, but I love Enjoy the Silence. I love it. I think it's such a beautiful tune.
Yeah.
So they should do Dave Garn on Disgraceland, because that's a checkered story, isn't it?
Mate, I saw...
Didn't he nearly die about three times?
He said that, again, you're picking great songs. They're one of my most loved bands.
Yeah.
I absolutely adore that band. And I saw them
at Crystal Palace Athletics Ground around the time of, like, I Feel You and Morgan, like, when Dave come back as rock star,
yeah,
with, like, long hair, tattoos, and I was reading some stuff about him. Tour support was Primal Scream. That's right. Not going to help.
Oh, Jesus. Can you imagine the rider backstage? Don't give us food. If I can snort it or inject it, I want it on the rider.
Apparently he was... Speedballs were his thing.
Yeah.
And, like, they're called Speedballs, they were, weren't they?
Yeah, that's what killed River Phoenix as well.
Yeah. Mm. And he
and John Belushi.
Oh, Belushi, was it? Mm-hmm. As well, yeah. And apparently he had a throne backstage, and the minute he walked off stage, he'd sit in this throne and would, like, literally just get, like, fucked up. And then I remember reading that someone had found him, like, naked with just a gun, like, passed out on their garden, where he'd just gone to score something and had just been beaten up and whatever. So he got in a bit of a mess.
Yeah.
And, like,
I mean, it's like, I'm not condoning any of this sort of behaviour, but you just don't hear those kind of rock and roll stories anymore, do you?
No.
Andy always jokes, my husband always jokes, that the kids in bands these days, or so, you know, in 20 years they'll have a conversation and go, God, do you remember that summer of 2021 when all we did was juice raw fruit? Amazing. God, we were wasted on raw fruit. You know, because they don't drink, they don't take, and I'm not saying there's anything bad with that, but... It's going to be a happy medium. The odd little rock star story is quite... I mean, Pete Doherty, total casualty. I don't... Mm-hmm. Maybe not that far, but...
I do think it's quite strange. And, I mean, it is weird. Like, I'd never been to Ibiza until about 4 years ago.
Mm.
And when I got there, I was hoping for some really incredible bohemian experience.
Mm.
And what I got was... what felt to me was just... a whole lot of people that were considerably more younger than me. That's probably the issue that I actually had. But that looked like they hadn't had a drink all year because they'd been in the gym just for this 5 days where
they can
stand by a pool. Not get in it.
Yeah,
in case they get their hair wet.
Yeah.
And just stand there. And I just think I'm much more happy that I was buying two bottles of wine for a fiver and throwing it up in a doorway somewhere and just having some fun. And... But I guess
the pendulum always swings, though. That's what my dad always says. So we'll probably, you know, I'll come back in another 10 years and do this again, Stu. I looked at my watch like it was going to tell me what the year will be in 10 years. And we'll probably be discussing some, you know, colourful rock star death. Because the pendulum always swings. There'll always be one.
I've seen Depeche Mode a lot. And I've never seen him as good as when he was out of his mind.
I'm sure the same could be said of the... Well, I say the Doors, but then they were equally awful as well, weren't they?
He was just an absolute rock god when I saw him.
Fit as, like, fuck as well.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So cool. And, like, and I've seen them since he's been clean, and they've always been... They're an incredible live band, but it weren't that.
Yeah.
And, like, and still one of my favourite of the gigs I saw. Oh, he's an absolute dude, and... Yeah, they've been on the list, and I've reached out loads. Like, any of them, it was like, I'd love to have a chat with them and just be able to talk about what it was like in my club before I was there.
Yeah.
How was that new romantic time?
You'll get them one day.
Fingers crossed.
Consistency is key. Keep asking.
Okay, so for your last track, you play Tastemaker now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to ask you to tell me a song that many people may not know that you would like them to hear, please.
This is a tastemaker. So I wasn't sure whether I understood the question. Is this just something that might surprise you that I would like, or something that I think people should know about?
A bit of both, I guess.
God, that's really hard. I just default always these days to First Aid Kit. I absolutely love them. And so I mean, because when it was like, what might people be surprised that you listen to, I was going to go S Club 7, because I fucking love S Club 7. Honestly, Reach and Don't Stop Moving, which has an epic, obviously, Billie Jean riff. And they're such wonderful, stupid pop songs and really feel good. But then if it's a tastemaker, and I'm not going to tastemake with S Club 7, am I? So I would go First Aid Kit, because I just think that blend, A, they're Swedish and they sound like they're from... somewhere in California, do you know what I mean? And I love the way that they have that sibling harmony. I remember talking to Mark and Scott, the bass player and the singer of the Blue Tones, and saying, why do I love you singing together so much? And I think it was Scott that said, it's genetic harmony, isn't it, Kaywood? Genetic harmony, you know. So it's because they have a similar genetic code in their voice. And so it sounds lovely. And the girls in First Aid Kit are the same. Like, I've always loved West Coast rock. And they've just recreated it brilliantly for the 21st century. It's gorgeous. I mean, I'm obsessed with, you know, like the birds and the animals and all of those sorts of bands, Jefferson Airplanes. So they came along. And the Eagles, I know it's embarrassing, but because they were essentially a supergroup, but I love them. Saw them with my dad at Wembley a couple of years ago.
Oh, nice.
God, the whole of the stadium cried when they played Take It to the Limit. Honestly, there was not a dry house. It was amazing. It was just, yeah. And I love that vibe, that West Coast jangly, hippie, hot summer's day, long maxi skirt vibe.
Did you go to Cliffs and see Brian Wilson?
No, I've never seen Brian Wilson. I'd love to see Brian Wilson.
That was another one. When the lights went down, he sat at the piano and played God Only Knows. It was
which
defiant.
I walked down the aisle to. Oh, played on a string quartet.
Yeah, that's a moment.
Yeah, it was. Made Holly Willoughby cry. It was lovely.
But, First Aid Kit, have you seen them? It's on YouTube, playing for Paul Simon, singing Simon and Garfunkel's America.
I've heard that version, but I haven't seen the clip on YouTube, so I should look that up this afternoon.
Makes me cry. It's
does it really?
Hard. Unreal. It's unreal.
Also, I fucking love the Swedes.
Yeah.
I love the Scandos. I've got such a crush on them. If I thought I could, I would move my family to somewhere in Scandinavia. Yeah. And I've been loads because of the covering the Eurovision semi-finals. Yeah. And so Finland, which was quite Russian, and then Denmark was lovely, and Norway.
Yeah.
Norway's quite boring but very clean, and it was Sweden was the one for me. I spent a week there on a travel show as well, and I was like, I really like this place.
Yeah.
And the Wannadies were friends of ours in the Britpop years as well. So
what a pop band.
And when I went over to do this travel programme for the Travel Channel, Per and Christina had me round for dinner one night.
What
and
are
it was,
they doing?
I don't know, actually. I mean, living off the royalties of You and Me song, I don't know.
One of the most beautiful records ever written.
I think Per might be... I think he might write for Swedish artists.
Right.
That's only a guess, but I have a feeling, because when I did Eurovision and one of the... I think the Swedish entry was a favourite to win. And did it win that year? I can't remember. This was like in the mid-noughties, and mid to late noughties. And Per was mates with the artist, and they were sort of on the Swedish songwriting scene. So if I didn't know better, I'd think that that's what he was doing, because they've just got away with pop, haven't they?
Oh, Cardigans.
Yeah, I know. Nina Pearson. Oh, Adam Devlin from the Blue Tones used to have a bit of a crush. I was like, you're a bit jealous about Nina Pearson. It was those fucking dimples. In fact, I was so fascinated. I Googled her recently to see how well she's aged.
Mm.
And she's a beautiful woman. She just is now a nearly 50-year-old beautiful woman.
I literally was... I don't know what I was looking at last night, but I was just scrolling through the internet, and there was a thing about some new music from Susanna Hoffs from the Bangles.
Yeah, she's still stunning, isn't she?
It's unbelievable.
Uh-huh.
I literally said to my wife, will you look at Susanna Hoffs?
And also, she's obviously had work done, but it's really good work.
Yeah.
And I love a bit of Botox, me. Mm. I've been adopted fully by my home county of Essex. Get the lips, get the Botox, love it. Get the hair blonded and then pinked. But yes, they're just gorgeous, gorgeous women, aren't they?
And men, Morten Harkett.
Oh, he came into Nickelodeon once. So I was a massive a-ha fan when I was a kid. And Hunting High and Low is just such a beautiful record. It was amazing. And then he came in to be... I mean, he was obviously a bit like a-ha had peaked and troughed by then.
Oh, I bet he looked like a bag of rubbish then.
No, he still looked... Cheekbones, a good slice of fucking cheese on, mate. He was still gorgeous, and he was so charming and lovely.
I heard, I don't know if I'm right here, that he was with the woman from... What was the band done, Barbie Girl?
Oh, Aqua, Lena.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he was with her.
Oh, really? But they'd make a cute couple.
Yeah. Well, anyone's going to look good if you're with Morten Harkett.
I know.
What
is that? They're a couple now?
I don't know. This was like the last I heard. I'm sure.
Oh, I'm going to have to Google that when I get out of here.
There you go. Right, so, Playlist is done. What track are you going for by First Aid Kit?
Probably Emmylou, I should think. I mean, I know it's like it's the out and out one, isn't it? But I sing it to the kids as well.
Yeah.
When I'm in fine fettle, when the voice is in a good place, I can sing that.
When you go on YouTube to watch him perform for Paul Simon, also watch them perform for Emmylou, because that is unreal.
Oh, for Emmylou. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I mean, how lovely.
She's in pieces.
Is she really?
It's
I mean, how do they get through it? Because I can't sing when I'm going to cry. It's really, the one thing people don't realise, this is from my time in musical theatre, is all those kids on The X Factor and stuff, especially when they've won it, and then they have to go and perform the single. It's fucking hard to do when all you want to do is cry.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, looking ahead, we're recording this in the middle of June.
Mm-hmm.
So we've just been told that we're in lockdown for another... a relaxed lockdown.
It's very relaxed, isn't it? It's basically just no clubbing and no gigs.
Yeah.
That's it, isn't it?
No fun stuff, yeah. And so, with that in mind, what are you... Oh, I'll tell you what, before we even go there, let's talk about your podcast.
Aye, Regular Bitches.
Yes.
Did you know, Stu, a certain lovely man has asked us to play at the McFly gig in Southend? We're on the podcast stage. Yes, thank you very much.
He sounds like a wonderful young man.
He's lovely. We're shitting ourselves.
Have you not done a live show with him?
No, but I can talk that. Basically, I said to Lou, my regular bitch co-host, I said, listen, there's every chance we're just going to have a half-hour conversation on our own in a tent. Are you okay with that? And she went, yeah, I'm fine with it. But we have got a plan, so we might see if we can get a certain podcasting McFly wife on for 10 minutes with us.
That'd be good.
If she can leave the kids, because I don't know what their situation will be, but I'm going to slide into her DMs at some point. And if not, then we will I'll talk to anybody.
Yeah.
And I don't mind even, and Lou will not mind being my, my sidekick for this. And I'll just take questions from the crowd on the 90s. What do you want to ask me about the 90s? You know, it'd just be really fun to be there. I'm really excited and I bloody love McFly. So, that's going to be really good. But we are Irregular Bitches. It was... Lou always wanted it to be more a menopause podcast. I wanted it to be a midlife podcast because I just think you get to... You won't understand this, Stu, because men do age better than women. But you, like, I never minded people wolf whistling at me in the street. I always, maybe that's a bit anti-feminist of me, but I quite liked being attractive to the opposite sex. And then it all suddenly fucks off when you're in your 40s. And it's like, what happened? I mean, I've still got it going on, maybe. And so I started it with Louise because we were both struggling with our hormones and we both just didn't want mid-40s, early 50s women to feel invisible like they are sometimes made to feel. So, it's irregular bitches because you might not know this, but your hormones just make your periods really irregular when you start going through the perimenopause. So we are literally irregular bitches. And it's really been an eye-opener because so many women do struggle with their perimenopause and menopause symptoms. It's really... Hormones are absolute wankers, ultimately. And you go to the doctor because your moods are swinging wildly and you can't... Sometimes you can be in the same room with your family and sometimes you really can't. And they just give you an antidepressant and that's not the fix, really. And it's not sometimes HRT. Sometimes it's just having somebody that's in the same boat to talk to about it. So we've had nutritionists on... doctors, we've had Dr. Sarah Jarvis, we've had Dr. Amir Khan on to talk us through what's going on with our bodies. And then we've had loads of my old 90s mates. So we've had Tamsin, Althwaite, Lisa Snowden, Amanda Abington, who was married to Martin Freeman, pro-offered her as a guest because I was like, we'd been blown out by somebody. She messaged me and went, oh, come on. And she was amazing. So it's just a little chat.
Yeah.
About being in your 40s, late 40s, early 50s, really, and what it's like to be a woman in her late 40s, early 50s. And it's wonderful. And it's hard work, because as you know, like, there's no fucking money in podcasting. It's not going to buy you a Ferrari, is it?
No.
But I think it's important to keep this dialogue open, especially now that the menopause is being taken out of the corner. It's like baby in Dirty Dancing. Yeah. I always say nobody puts menopause in the corner, menopausal women in the corner. And now... Davina started the dialogue when she did her documentary recently, and it's starting to be out there. And I'm keen to carry the conversation going, not just about the menopause, you know, but just about how you have to remember women in their late 40s and 50s now were forged in the fires of girl power.
Yeah.
You know, we're not our mums who were, you know, had very, very different lives to us. And yeah. It was put up and shut up. We're not going to take it fucking lying down. So, well, we don't want to take anything lying down anymore because we don't like having sex anymore. Darling, leave me alone. But honestly, so that's, I just think, let's not forget that we had fire in our belly then and we haven't stopped having fire in our bellies now. So that's what I just want to make content for those women because they saw me through some, you know, fabulous and some awful times back in the 90s and noughties. And it's, and also it's really nice. And I've heard you and Scroobius Pip talk about this as well, and him and Fern on Happy Place. It's really nice to do a podcast because there's no TV bullshit. Fucking hate TV bullshit.
Punk as fuck.
You just do what you like. You just do what you like. You make the content that you want. If somebody wants it, you know, and you're not going to make any money out of it, but you might make a bit. And nobody tells you what to do. Nobody tells you to take that bit out or you shouldn't say that. I openly talk about the fact I used to take drugs in the 90s and noughties now. I used to be terrified of admitting that on any sort of TV programme.
Yeah.
But that's what I did. Why am I lying about it? So was everybody. We were all off our faces. I'm not going to lie about it. I'm not going to pretend that I was holier than thou. And it's very freeing. Podcasting is very freeing. And then you also get to meet some of my good friends now have come from podcasting. Yeah. You get to meet wonderful people
absolutely.
Who are doing the same thing. It's very safe. Very safe place.
It is.
Safe and creative.
It is. It's a community.
Yeah.
And I like that.
Yeah.
And it's something that I didn't really get that in the music industry, and it feels...
Yeah, music industry was slightly kinder than telly, but I mean, had a conversation on Sunday. We had a barbecue and some of my friends were like, but if you got offered, you know, the jungle, would you do it? I was like, no, I fucking wouldn't. For a start, for a celebrity of my calibre, the money would be appalling. And I'm not going to, like, make a twat of myself in the vain hope that I might get some little TV tidbit dangled in front of me. Oh, do you want to get back on the telly, Kayward? It's like, no, fuck off. I'm happy at home making a podcast and being an Essex mum.
Yeah.
I lead quite a simple life, but I lead it on my terms. I'm a scentsy consultant, Stu. I sell fucking scented wax and it makes me really happy.
Fundamentally, that's the be-all and end-all, isn't it?
Absolutely. Do what makes you happy. And that's the holy grail for me. And also, that is success to me. Success is not Range Rovers and five-bedroom houses and being on the telly. It's about being happy. If you're happy or you are striving to find happiness and you're working towards finding happiness, that is success.
Perfect.
Bravo you.
Thank you, Sarah.
That was
great. Absolutely lovely.
Thank you.
There you go. Sarah Kaywood. What an absolute delight. Oh, it was such a nice chat. And it felt great to be sitting in the shed at the end of the garden with someone and not just having this, you know, animated chat with someone, you know, over my laptop. So this was really nice to be able, it sounds really silly, set up two microphones just to plug that second microphone in my little recorder and not have to convert Zoom audio afterwards. It's just, yeah, I've gone old school. And if that is old school. But yeah, it was an absolute delight to speak to Sarah. Go check out the podcast. It's ace, as I'm sure. And yeah, I guess, I'll tell you what, I did mention it at the beginning, but I'll just nudge you again once more. If this is your first time listening, go and have a look in the archives. Because a lot of the people that we spoke about today, I've had them on as guests, so go have a rummage and find them. And yeah, I know we spoke quite a lot about 90s music. If that's your thing, then, oh my gosh, go get stuck in because, yeah, I've spoken to, all of them and more. Right, I'm back next time. In the meantime, give us a like, love, share, retweet, subscribe, all the usual gubbins. Have a lovely week. Stay safe, be excellent to each other. Thanks again to you lot for listening. Thanks once more to Sarah for giving up her time and coming over to the hood to record in the end of my garden. I'll be back next time. Much love. Bye-bye.
It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. Keep me, Stu Whiffin.